Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I am your host, Laura Reeves. And I have today, possibly, one of my most exciting guests yet. You guys are going to be so excited. I know I am. I'm being joined by Dr. Lori Marker. She is the founder of the Cheetah Conservation Fund. And I first met Dr. Marker when I was little, and she was working in Roseburg, Oregon, at the Wildlife Safari. And this is where she developed the cheetah breeding program, one of the most successful cheetah breeding programs in the world, the most successful one in North America. Am I right, Lori?
Yes, that's right. Yep.
Amazing. And Lori, welcome. Thank you so much. I'm really excited for you to talk to us about cheetahs and dogs, which is where we kind of cross over these days.
Yeah, absolutely. Who would have known, right?
Who'd have thunk it when I was this bratty little kid chasing you around the wildlife safari?
Yeah, we had a dog then too.
Yes.
That kind of helped get people to know more about how special dogs are. And
yes,
they were helping me help raise a lot of the animals there at the Wildlife Safari. In particular, I had a dog that helped raise Kyam.
Yes.
Who was one of the most special cheetahs. And it was
the one
Kyam
I remember
that I ended up in Namibia. So
see, dogs are everything.
Dogs are.
Okay, Lori, so let's talk a little bit. We have four things we really wanted to cover, and they're amazingly powerful, and their crossover is pretty impressive. When you were working at the Wildlife Safari, you were doing a lot of research on why cheetahs were so difficult to breed in captivity. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, we didn't know a lot about the cheetah as a species, and so, you know, even though people have kind of revered cheetahs for 5,000 years, kings and emperors and Indian moguls have them, but still nobody really had a written history and nobody knew that much about them. And they were historically known not to breed well in captivity.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, learning more about them in the wild, we understand with big, huge ranges they live in and things like that, the captivity was just a little bit more difficult. Which, since that early research, actually in the 80s, we've helped change a lot of the way that zoos manage their cheetahs in larger areas, and especially for breeding, like we had in Oregon at the Wildlife Safari, off-exhibit breeding areas.
Right.
But our research actually went into trying to understand that more from a reproductive standpoint, but then we got into their genetics, and in the early 80s actually discovered that cheetahs are a species that lack genetic diversity. And that research came out of our work there at the Wildlife Safari, and that's taken me down a very long, long journey. And cheetahs still lack genetic diversity. It's something that came from a bottleneck they went through about 10 to 12,000 years ago when they escaped the Pleistocene extinction. So a remnant population remained, and that's where the population of cheetahs that are found in Africa and Asia today all came from, was this very small, small number of animals. And, you know, interestingly, I know, you know, many of our small breeds of animals, our rare breeds of animals,
right,
are in a similar boat. And animals like, we work with Anatolian shepherds, the
yes,
Kangal dogs from Turkey.
Yes.
And they also are a very, very small gene pool. And many, I think, of our rare breeds are that way. But the cheetah is very unique.
I think that's fascinating. You're saying the cheetah bottleneck was 10,000 years ago. We're talking about our dogs, and it was 100 years ago. Can you imagine how hard it's going to be?
Yeah. We at least know a lot more now. And with
right,
that, it allows us to look at management and breeding. And so, for instance, I manage what's called the International Cheetah Stud Book, which is a registry of all the cheetahs in captivity. Like you have your registries
right,
with all of your breeds, obviously. But what we do is we very carefully manage the genetics of those animals so that we're maximizing every gene that there is, because again, the cheetah is so genetically similar
mm-hmm,
that we have to be very, very careful.
And so you were seeing, because of that, basically reproductive depression, right? Like smaller litter sizes and couldn't actually get the cats pregnant.
Well, that was one, but that might have been more of a behavioral issue.
Mm.
What we did find was like 70 to 80% abnormal sperm. And that right there was a flag.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, with livestock, if you have a bull that's 35% abnormal, that animal is considered sterile. But obviously, cheetahs do breed. We do have reproduction. And our litter sizes, you know, it's not that those have become smaller, but we did find about a 30% infant mortality.
Mm.
And, you know, that does have something to do with the genetics as well. And we'd see congenital problems, and those are the kinds of issues that we've then tracked within the captive breeding program to try to understand more about the overall health and health issues we'd find.
Mm.
So cheetahs, again, are very susceptible to all the feline diseases, and unfortunately, when they're all genetically similar, if one animal gets it, you pretty much see a spread of a disease or a virus that can wipe out, you know, a huge population as well. So those are all the baseline of much of what we've been studying and
Right. Continue
to study in my work over in Namibia as well. So this has been a lifetime work.
And I think one of the most fascinating pieces, you were talking about the dog that raised Khayyam, and the work that you did with him was just amazing. And breeding in captivity, the companion dogs that you're using for these zoos and
Right. Other
installations for the captive breeding program. Talk a little bit about that, because to me, that's fascinating stuff.
Well, yeah, I mean, it just seemed, you know, I had a great dog. She was a black lab type and was with me everywhere and was always with me and my animals. And I had dairy goats. And then at the wildlife safari, I ran the veterinary clinic and the animal nurse.
Mm-hmm.
And we ended up with orphan animals coming in. And my dog just picked up and started nursing them, taking care of them, loving them, giving them, you know, some companionship. And, you know, I would give the bottle, but, you know, beyond that. And then we ended up with lion cubs and, you know, tiger and cheetah. And my dog, her name was She-So, because she was so good. She took care of everybody. And actually, she raised Khayyam, who is this wonderful cheetah that I raised at the wildlife safari. And this was in the early, middle 1970s.
Right.
And they were just fast friends. They would play together. The dog would discipline the little cheetah cub, where I believe in positive reinforcement, and so I think my dog must have taught me that, where you know, the dog did all the play. And, you know, when you're raising an orphan cat, whether it's a cheetah, which is the smallest of the big cats, or a lion or a tiger, you know, you don't want to be wrestling and playing with them, because they can way out wrestle and play with you. That's not the behavior you ever want to put into an orphan animal. And so the dog was able to play like that, but also then teach the cheetah how to be gentle.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of where it all started. And the next thing, we ended up having a cheetah cub that was orphaned that the San Diego Zoo wanted. And so the next cheetah went down there, and I said to San Diego Zoo, hey, you guys, you should get a dog. And they thought, what do you mean a dog? And this is now in the early 80s.
Right.
They said, yeah, this is how they grow up. This is just perfect. And from there, I think it just took off.
Mm.
So that dog and cheetah became very famous down in San Diego, and Khayyam and She-So, my dog, were, everybody in Oregon knew who they were.
Yes.
And now it is commonplace, or it is recommended, that if a cheetah has to be hand-raised, to hand-raise it with a dog to give it a companion. They are social. Cheetahs want to be with something else, and they fall, you know, in love and play with them. And some of the dogs that we've used for this, and now I'm going to fast forward, that I moved to Namibia permanently in 1991.
Yes.
And when I got there, a couple years later, we started a livestock guarding dog program. And then I ended up with a orphan cheetah cub. And all of a sudden, I had this orphan cheetah cub growing up with one of our Anatolian Shepherd Kangal puppies. And next thing I know, around the kind of the United States, the Kangal dogs and Anatolians are telling the story about how this breed of dog is now helping protect cheetahs in the wild, really, because we breed these dogs, we put them with farmers' flocks, and the dogs are now, we have 70 to 100% decline of livestock loss by having the dogs growing up with the livestock herds in Namibia. So it's become just a well-known case.
But Lori, this is something you started in Namibia for the farmers who were killing cheetahs and depleting already minuscule numbers, because they were trying to save their goats. I mean, you know, they're
right.
This is their livelihood, right?
Right. And they were killing that time like 800 to 900 cheetahs a year. And not only cheetahs, but jackals and leopards and, you know, anything that would come in and try to disturb their livestock. And so we started the program 25 years ago. And it's so interesting because, again, when I was in Roseburg, Winston, Oregon, at the Wildlife Safari, we had sheep farmers all around.
Yep.
And in the middle 70s, a group of scientists, dog scientists, back from actually Massachusetts, had gone over to Europe. They got a USDA grant to try to look at alternative issues to try to help farmers with predation. Mm. So people were poisoning the sheep or the coyotes.
Mm-hmm.
And the more they did, the more coyotes came up, and they thought something's got to happen. And so these guys went over. Ray Coppinger went to Europe and found these dogs and ended up bringing a handful of them back to America. And the research project actually was in Oregon. Mm. So it was just fascinating.
I just think that's amazing because having obviously grown up in Roseburg, the sheep herds here are huge, and the easiest way to get your dog shot and killed is to have it run somebody's sheep, right? I mean, that's still a thing today. So having those guardian dogs makes all the difference on so many levels.
Yeah, I mean, they're just amazing. And so I watched them all throughout Roseburg mm. and that whole area, and I thought, my God, I think this could work. And when I moved over to Namibia, I kept looking at the kinds of dogs. And farmers in Africa have dogs,
mm-hmm.
but most of them are small. And what I found is that they were more of a herding dog. And so they'd see a predator, and you know how the herding dogs get that look in their eyes?
Right.
The look. Where, mm. Yeah. And that's the predatory look, and it actually makes flocks move.
Right.
And so if they saw a predator, the dogs that they would have actually would start moving the flock,
mm.
which would then get the predators to come in and kill more of their livestock.
Right.
I went, my God, well, that's not going to work. We need a guarding dog. And as you know, these Kangals and Anatolian Shepherds, they stand their ground.
Right.
And they bark, and they basically say, I'm really big, I'm here, you stay away. And I just thought, you know, I think these dogs are going to work. And 25 years ago, we started the program in Namibia. We brought the first group of 10 dogs over from here in the United States. Actually, a breeder from Virginia
okay.
had donated them to us. And from there, 25 years, fast forward,
wow.
we've now bred and placed nearly 700 dogs.
I think that is so amazing. And those farmers, then their livestock is safe. Consequently, the cheetahs are safe. And so, I mean, it's just such that one small thing.
Win, win, win. Yeah.
And you're seeing your cheetah numbers go up in Namibia as a result?
Well, yes, we've seen a stabilization.
Okay.
Definitely. And the random indiscriminate killing
mm-hmm.
has definitely slowed down. And especially not just for the cheetah, but in particular for the cheetah, but also helping farmers live with the leopard and with the jackals and caracals. But these dogs are just so amazing. Baboons can be a problem also.
Right.
But the livestock guarding dogs are, you know, they're just so smart. And so we've seen just a huge decline of losses. And when the farmers don't have those losses, then they're not out wantingly killing all the predators.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been win, 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 win.
Absolutely. That's what I'm saying. That is such an incredible win-win-win from one bright idea right here in Roseburg, Oregon. Sorry, I can't stand it.
I know. Isn't it great? I love it.
Talk about full circle. It just makes me crazy. I love it.
Yeah. I mean, it's just amazing what I learned, actually. And I was at the Wildlife Safari for about 16 years.
Yeah.
You know, helping it grow. I started in there right as it had started. And
yes.
then from that, you know, went through growing it. And the cheetahs obviously were what drove so much of what I wanted to do and the research that I did. And then moving into Namibia, now I've been there, next year is going to be our 30th anniversary.
Crazy.
Of the Cheetah Conservation Fund. And basing it in Namibia, we've now actually worked throughout the continent. And the work that we do, I think, with the livestock guarding dogs and our approach to predation or predator human-wildlife conflict
mm-hmm.
has become kind of a model, I would say, for many of the predator people worldwide. But our livestock guarding dogs, for instance, are now being used. We helped develop a whole program in South Africa, in Kenya, in Botswana. So we really look at the success of this from Namibia actually growing, you know, far and wide.
Hang tight, guys. Got a little bit of information for you. We'll be right back to the podcast in a minute. Heads up, crew. Join our patrons today. Get immediate access to the support of a closed Facebook chat group, special patrons-only episodes, free mentoring sessions, and more. Just like the NPR of dogdom, Pure Dog Talk brings you the news, the knowledge, and the insight to succeed with your purebred dog. In exchange, our Pure Dog patrons share the love with monthly or annual gifts, and that helps defray the cost of overhead and sort of keeping the MP3s rolling, you know? Hit me up, Laura at puredogtalk.com, and I'll hook you up with the details. And you're also developing, and this is a program I've seen also replicated here in the States and other places, scat dogs. So dogs that are hunting poopy.
Yes, black gold is what we called it.
Tell me more about this. This is fascinating stuff to me.
Well, we do. We use the dogs and they track. You know, they've got such great sense of smell. And we've used a variety of different dogs. We had a Border Collie, a Weimaraner. Now we've got a Belgian Malinois. And, you know, they're just amazing in how dogs can scent.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've trained them on cheetah scent poop,
mm-hmm.
black gold. And then we do searches out in the bush. It's kind of like finding a needle in a haystack, but the dogs are so good at picking the scent up. And then they will sit and, you know, mm-hmm. we've got, you know, tracking collars on them and we know where they're going and, you know, we're right there with them. And they'll sit and they'll say, here's the poop right here. And you pick it up and then we bring it into our genetics lab. So there in Namibia at our Cheetah Conservation Fund Center, we actually have a full-scale genetics lab. And so we're still looking at the overall population, the relatedness, the population structures. And the dogs have played a huge role. Our teams up in Kenya are also using scat dogs to find scat of cheetahs there as well. And we're using the dogs now up in Angola to find not only cheetah, but some of the other predators as well. So dogs, we call them our ecologists. They're very, very smart. And they work hand in hand with our college degree ecologists.
Absolutely. So tell me what you're finding from the scat in the genetics lab. What's coming through that you're able to use for future research?
A lot of it is just knowing who those animals are and the relatedness.
Okay.
And so, you know, the home ranges, the overlapping, new animals that come into a range. We might get a picture of them on a camera trap. It's not like we see cheetahs all that often. So everything that we do is kind of detective work. So, you know, years back when farmers were still catching and killing so many cheetahs, we stopped that killing by primarily saying, hey, if you catch a cheetah, can we come in? We will anesthetize it. We want to get blood and tissue. You know, we want to then measure it. And then, gee, could we put a radio collar on it and track it and find out how it lives? And that allowed us to find out how big their ranges are and how they are using those ranges. And a cheetah's range is like 800 square miles. So
right.
They're very, very big. So with that then using like camera traps, we kind of know where different animals might be. And they go to what are called marking trees or play trees that they can climb up into and have very good view. And then they also will meet other cheetahs, whether it's a dominant cheetah, marking and a subordinate male will go, oh my, there's a big male here, I better leave, which is kind of an avoidance that goes on. Or a female going to a tree, marking and smelling the male that she wants to mate with, because cheetahs have mate choice, which we never knew before. The female will pick the male. And that then now is helping all the work that we're doing back in captivity with our colleagues that have, like, wildlife safari breeding facilities.
Right.
Or San Diego, or, you know, we've got a handful of excellent breeding facilities here in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And they're working all together on much of the research that we've done from the field, putting it back into work here.
Well, I love the concept of mate choice. I think that that's something that is so fascinating. And I wonder how much of that crosses over into other species, because I've always thought it about dogs. I've seen dogs that, you know, I plan to do this breeding and you're going to like it. And they're like, yep, nope.
Yeah, right. Well, yeah. And then, you know, how you get them to like each other. So,
right.
You know, sometimes dogs will never. We had one of our clerk breeding female Kangle dogs. And boy, she had one, and that was it. And
mm-hmm.
any other male that came around, she wanted to, like, eat him up.
Yes.
So, yeah, dogs do, and all other animals.
Mm, interesting.
But maybe not as to the extent.
Right. And so, just as a little bit in closing, I wonder if you would do your wonderful little spiel on how cheetahs are different from the other big cats and how wonderful they are, because this is all stuff I learned when I was, like I said, 8.
Right.
And I just don't know that everybody understands how amazing cheetahs are.
Yeah. Well, they are the most unique of all the 42 species of cats. And they're in their own genus, which is called Acinonyx. And they're the only species in there. So like the large cats are, you know, lions, tigers, jaguars, leopards. They're all in the Panthera family. And then there's all the smaller cats. But the cheetah is the only one within the Acinonyx genus, which makes them very, very unique. Yeah, a lot of people, you know, 100, 250 years ago thought that they were a dog because they have semi-non-retractable claws.
Right.
And those claws are just the adaptation that has evolved. You know, the cheetah is one of the oldest of all of the cats. And through that evolutionary process, they've ended up being fast with their niche in the ecosystem to bring down fast antelope. Antelope are fast because cheetahs were chasing them. And their claws are like cleats for traction running. So that's one of the really, I think, unique adaptations. And I think interesting for people here in the United States to know is that the second fastest land animal, the cheetah being the fastest, the second fastest land animal is the pronghorned antelope. And it lives, you know, out here in the, I guess, in the, you know, west of
or Wyoming.
Of, right. And I think eastern Oregon.
But yep, a little
they're
bit.
Fast. Because cheetahs once lived here, a cheetah-like animal once lived here in North America. That died off at the Pleistocene extinction 10 to 12,000 years ago.
Interesting. I don't even remember hearing that. Or, I mean, you know, maybe it got filed away somewhere. And that is part of the bottleneck that we started this show with. So that is a fascinating concept.
So cheetahs just are very unique. They're very special. Their closest relatives are the mountain lion or the jacaranda, which are both north, and the jacaranda is a South American large feline. And from that, also, every part about their body is built for speed. So just being able to go 70 miles an hour is just amazing. And the physiological adaptations on that, aerodynamically built, small head, they lost a lot of the weight. So they've got lightweight bones, they've got very small canine teeth. To have larger area in their nostrils, to be able to breathe. Their eyes, you know, again, they can see very far, a couple miles, we think, you know, without binoculars. Just because their long-sighted sight is what they really go by.
Mm-hmm.
And again, a lot of the dogs that we know now that we love.
Sighthounds.
Like greyhounds and, whippets. And
they're
all in that way, too, the way that they sight. But the cheetah is a cat, and this is how it is built. And it is fast, but they're a sprinter. And I need to let you know that there are less than 7,500 cheetahs left in the world today.
Right.
And with that, we are still facing problems around small pocketed populations. There's about 31 populations found in 23 countries. And 20 of those populations are under probably 200 individuals.
Mm.
And that is going to be causing them even more problems. And that's why we, as the Cheetah Conservation Fund, do everything that we can to try to help save these remaining cheetahs in the wild. Even though we have a sanctuary, we have orphan animals there in Namibia, we primarily, our job is to keep them in the wild. We work with farmers to reduce livestock loss. We teach them about good livestock management. We give them livestock guarding dogs. We talk about grazing management, why wildlife is important, so that we can maintain the wildlife, so that the cheetah has prey, and that the farmers protect their livestock.
Yeah, prey other than their goats.
And so the dogs play a key role in that. And so it's just really exciting. You know, we'd love everybody to know what we do and go to our website.
And we are going to put a link on it on the blog page. So you guys, everybody that's listening on iTunes, go to the website. There is going to be a link for the Cheetah Conservation Fund. You're going to learn more than you ever knew was possible, because this really is a globally important project that Lori's working on, and her work with the species and with the dogs, with the species, I just think is earth-shattering. I just love it.
And, you know, we do take volunteers, and we're always, you know, needing even many here at my, when I lecture, when I come into the United States, or have events, awareness events. And with that, oftentimes, you know, we look for an Anatolian Shepherd or a Kangal dog to join me at my presentations. And it's really, really neat to be able to talk with people about the Anatolian Shepherd and the Kangal dog. They're a species that's 5,000 years old. They've been working with livestock and people for 5,000 years.
I love that.
Yeah, we just need to really revere our man's best friend, woman's best friend.
Well, preservation breeders of dogs and wildlife. So there you go.
Dog saving cats.
Yes, I love it. Lori, thank you so, so very much. I appreciate your time more than you know. And enjoy your visit here in the States. I know that you don't get back to visit very often. So thank you for your time and have a great time while you're here.
Thank you very much. And thanks for spreading the word about great dogs and cheetah conservation.
And cheetahs. As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our dog show superintendents are the hardworking people who make the dog show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the super's desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.